Just a note before we start. Our show talks about touchy subjects that may be difficult for some of our listeners. Take care of yourself. If you feel you need to seek help, see the links at the end of our show notes for resources.
Welcome to Touchy Subjects, the podcast that aims to make those awkward conversations around domestic and sexual violence just a little less awkward. I'm Sean.
I'm Allie.
And I'm Amanda.
And today we're going to be discussing women in sports.
Yeah, this is a topic that's pretty relevant as of this recording date. It is August 5th, 2021. And there's been so much media coverage in the last, say, week and a half, because the 2020 Olympics are happening right now. And there's so much media coverage about sports, obviously, because that's what the Olympics are, but particularly women in sports.
Yeah, and seeing as today is August 5th, and the bronze medal match for women's soccer was this morning. Congratulations to our women's national soccer team on bringing home the bronze, which I know is not the result we had hoped for, considering we have won 4 gold medals in the past, but is still a good result nonetheless, considering competition in women's soccer has been improving drastically over the past years as more countries realize that there's a market for their women's national soccer teams. So they're putting more money into those programs to develop their athletes and making all competition better around the world than in that sport. But really, that kind of brings us to the crux of some of the things that happens in women's sports often, or women in sports, is that women's teams aren't either provided with the funding, they're not given as many opportunities as men, or they're just simply not paid as much. And we're going to dive into a lot of these different topics today.
So there's quite a clear inequity between men and women's sports, between gendered sports. And we want to point out some of these differences today, some of these inequities. And there's a couple of ways we're going to do this. There's one research study that we're going to use, which actually was released as of yesterday by the Representation Project, which is an organization that Touchy Subjects loves and respects. We've used them multiple times in our podcasts. But this research study is called Respect Her Game. And this is a report with findings about specifically media coverage, statistics of how media covers women in sports during the Olympics. So we're going to be using that today, and then just some other examples that we know are really important to talk about when it comes to athletics and women.
All right. So the first thing that we want to talk about today is the quantity of media coverage of sports, specifically the differences between women's sports and men's sports, and where the discrepancy is in coverage. So if we're looking at some of the Olympics coverage that's going on, what was that statistic, Sean?
So for Olympics coverage so far in the United States compared to the world, women received 59.1% of screen time in primetime Olympic coverage, compared to the global population's baseline of about 49.6% women. So on average, women athletes were receiving more coverage and screen time, at least here in the United States. But that can also translate then to simply like during the first week of the Olympics, which was their time frame that they were measuring it. More women athletes could have just been competing in their events, because usually those events are sometimes first. But also, mentioning our women's national soccer team, they were the ones who qualified for the Olympics. Our men didn't. So there's already going to be more coverage of women's sports there, just on a baseline of not having the equivalent men's team competing at the same time. Not saying that coverage isn't doing better and is covering women's sports more, but there can be also reasons why there is that big difference between the coverage that is happening.
But if that's the case, and we have more women qualifying from the United States to go to this, you know, wondrous event of the Olympics, we need to really look at the fact that if we have more women athletes who are qualifying, why are we not focusing on their needs and their training and putting the money into those women's sports when they're doing better?
Yeah. And really, this, we can take it even a step further and look at the general coverage of women in sports versus men in sports. And the study found that in the last 25 years, only 2% of ESPN's coverage and 2% of local news coverage focused on women athletes. Over 90% of sports hosts, anchors, and editors are men. So it could also just be in the lack of women being in those rooms means that women's sports are being marketed and viewed substantially less than the men's sports.
Yeah, I found that interesting, too, in this report from the Representation Project. They found in the current Olympics that 8 in 10 Olympic commentators are men. Now, this isn't the case for reporters that are on scene, you know, doing interviews after events, live, that sort of thing, in the actual venue. But the commentators, 8 out of 10 of them are men. And maybe this is jumping into a whole new topic about women not being seen as able to be experts in athletics. But what this really kind of highlights is that fact, right? Because the commentators are the ones that are making comments, they're analyzing, they're giving historical facts, they're talking all about the sports that are happening. And only 2 out of 10 of those are going to be women. And so this just reinforces that there's still that bias that maybe women can't understand sports as well.
Yeah. And even if you listen to some interviews that women reporters have done where they're talking about the inequities or the disparities that they experience in their field, a lot of them say, like, I have to basically just throw in random sports facts or knowledge to prove to the people that I'm interviewing that I know what I'm talking about.
Right.
The guy reporters don't have to do that.
No.
It's assumed that, oh, they're a guy and they're talking about this sport. They probably know what they're talking about. But a woman has to try and reinforce the fact that she knows what she's talking about.
Right. Not only on air, but when she walks into a room. When she walks into a room full of other male reporters, proving herself to you know, her audience and to the room. But I think, too, we can, you know, with this quantity of coverage, especially with the Olympics, we talked before, you know, before this recording that when we're watching the Olympics, we're watching the quote unquote sexy sports when it comes to women, right? Like, it's not going to be the non-sexy, non-exciting ones. There's so much coverage on gymnastics and soccer. And, of course, those all have their merits because those are some of our most high-performing athletic teams in the U.S., right?
Absolutely.
But there's also an element that if it's not visually appealing, if their bodies and what they're making their bodies do aren't visually appealing to audiences, let's not spend so much time on it.
Right. Like women's weightlifting. We've been doing pretty great this year in women's weightlifting, and it's just not getting the coverage because these aren't your stereotypically, you know, lean bodies that people enjoy watching. They're not wearing a bikini.
Yeah, for sure. It's, to me, it's almost an, when we do cover those sports that are non quote unquote sexy, which is an odd way to phrase it, but it almost feels like gawking, like, wow, look what women really can do. Like, we're all so shocked that they can weight lift. And I don't know, maybe that's just my own personal bias that I need to work through, but I definitely see a difference.
Well, it's even they're looking at those sports, like the quote unquote, like sexy sports. The amount of times I've heard from people is like, oh, I can't wait to watch beach volleyball. I know immediately they're talking about women's beach volleyball.
That's
That's gross. They're not planning on watching the men's beach volleyball. The reason they're doing that is because they're going to be women who are going to be scantily clad or not wearing a lot of clothing because they're playing beach volleyball. And, like, that's dumb. Like, watch them because the athletes. Our women's beach volleyball team is really, really good.
Yeah. They're amazing athletes. And if you watched it this year, the only thing that I could notice, like, I mean, obviously, yes, they're very, very talented, but these poor women, every single time in between a volley, they had to pull their bikini bottoms out of, can I say butt cracks?
Yeah.
They had to pull their bikini bottoms out of their butt cracks. How can you focus on winning a gold medal for your country if all you're doing is trying to fix your uniform so that your parts of your body don't start hanging out that you want covered?
That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. And we've seen some women's athletes fighting against those clothing like guidelines or those clothing requirements in their sport, like the
Norwegian handball team.
Yeah, the Norwegian handball team that refused to wear the outfit that they were required to wear and took the fine because they wanted to focus on playing the game. You had, at one point, the Australian women's basketball team was required to wear almost like a skin-tight, like unit, like one-piece, almost like swimsuit-style uniform.
I almost wanted you to say cat suit because that's what I thought was going to come after that. I thought you were going to say that they were required to wear a cat suit.
No, but they were required to wear this skin-tight uniform, sure, which is not conducive at all to playing basketball.
No.
Like, there's no point in that. They should be wearing shorts.
Yeah. Like, well, the sexualization, and this was our next topic on our list, because I think we could probably, I think this is one that really gets people, not just us, but people in general, fired up. Like, there is a clear discrepancy when we look at the outfits of men's teams and women's teams at the Olympics. I mean, forget all of the other arenas of sports. Let's just talk about the Olympics, where the entire world is watching, and there's this huge discrepancy, but why? They're both, I mean, both women and men at the Olympics have amazing bodies, right? Like, they're athletes. They're the world's top athletes. And yet women are still being forced to wear these, I don't know.
Like, in all facets of our society, we sexualize women, whether it's being in movies, TV shows, just advertising in general. Every facet, we will overly sexualize women because we're assuming that is what the market is going to want to see. Again, being in sports specifically, we assume that men are going to be the largest consumers of athletics. So the powers at be in whatever federation or whatever league they're playing in create dress code requirements with that in mind, that men are going to be watching. And how do we get men to watch women play sports?
Exactly. And that's the thing. To get men to watch women play sports, they better look good, because no man could obviously ever just want to watch their amazing talent. It's
right.
It's just really, you know, simplifying men in the fact that if you're a sports fan, you wouldn't want to watch women play sports. You would want to watch women run around in a bikini.
Yeah, which also, like, there's no foundational information. Like, I think this study even, like, pointed out that men and women view these sports the same. Like, the amount of men and women viewing the Olympics this year, it's pretty much equal.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly your market isn't just for men. But when you're creating rules with the idea that it is only going to be men, you're going to get this sexualization of women.
Yeah. Yeah. Another thing that comes to mind when we're talking about these outfits, but my favorite sport at the Olympics has and always will be gymnastics, because I find it fascinating. Historically, though, when I think back on the Olympics that I've watched since I've grown, you know, as I've grown up, one of the biggest things to me is that I recognize every single Olympics that the commentators and reporters for the women's gymnastics team always comment on their leotards, on their uniforms, right? They always talk about what they look like this year and how they're different from years past and how they look on certain bodies and this. But we have men's gymnastics and they wear uniforms too. Not a word that I can recall has ever been analyzed on their outfits, which goes to show that for women, that's a traditionally feminine thing, right? We're supposed to care about our outfits and we associate caring about clothing and how we look with femininity. And so it's distracting audience and the commentators from being able to focus on the same things for both men and women.
And then if you want to look at specifically the gymnastics teams, so many of these women are still technically children. They're 14, 15 years old, and they're out there being put into these, you know, skimpy little outfits that are made to draw the attention of men, even though they're minors.
Yeah, it's a good point. No wonder their mental health struggles later
exactly.
on.
Exactly.
And if anyone listening thinks like, oh, there's just an athletic reason why women have those clothing versus men wearing those things, if that was the case, our men's gymnastics team would be wearing the exact same outfits as our women's gymnastics team.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, their events are basically the same. They're, you know, on the uneven bars for women and the parallel bars for men. They're doing the same types of movements. So they would then have the same uniform.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's really fascinating. I think that this is the clothing issue has really been scrutinized this year in the Olympics more so than it has in previous years, which is, it's good conversation, I think.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things I'll point out, too, with dress codes, at least in some sports, it might have been the same for women's basketball. I'm not entirely sure. I'm just not a basketball fan. But I know for the women's national soccer team, when they first started competing at the Olympics, they had to wear the men's old uniforms because funding was not being put into women's sports basically at all. So when they went to compete on an international stage, the way that we had our team representing us was giving them old hand-me-downs that didn't fit them because they were men's clothing. Wow. And that was whatever they had left. What does that tell you about the investment and the care of those countries, of the organizations that they play for, about what they think of their athletes if they couldn't even spend $60 per athlete to get them their own uniforms?
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty intense. And while we're talking about sexualization, I think we should talk about camera angles and how women are objectified not only in dialogue, but by the cameras and by the actual coverage of the Olympics.
Yeah, as somebody who enjoys playing beach volleyball, I play in a summer league every year. Watching beach volleyball in the Olympics, I can't recall a time where I've watched a camera angle pan up a guy and like very slowly like focus on his butt as it went up. But I know I have seen those camera angles from watching women's beach volleyball.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this report that we're going off of today that we're referencing found that women are about 10 times more likely to be visually objectified with a camera angle than men are. 10 times. I mean, how can you dispute the fact that that's a disparity?
Yeah. And again, this isn't to say that men aren't sexualized or that men don't experience the same things, because they do. But it's that women experience these things so much more than men do. And even when men are sexualized, is the sexualization for the women watching, or is the sexualization for the men watching because they're focusing on parts of that body that as men watching we want to be like?
That's a good point.
Because again, if sports coverage is being made primarily because with the understanding that men are going to be the ones consuming it the most, if it is panning up a guy, that's to have men look and see that is the ideal male physique. That is what I need to look like or I need to strive for.
So another measured difference that this report talks about, and we'll, we've been talking about this report. We will link it in the show notes, probably put it on our social media. Another thing that I found interesting, and it ties into our next topic, but we'll put a pause on that for right now, is how athletes are interviewed and how they're introduced, right, by the coverage of the Olympics. The research found that both men and women are likely equal to be covered, right? Their backstories, their information, you know, things about them. However, there's gender differences in the type of in-depth coverage, right? So when reporters are talking about women, they tend to focus on things like their family, who they have at home, whether or not they're married, whether they have a partner, whether they have children back at home, that sort of thing. While that's not the same for men. And so, again, it signifies that we are putting those traditionally feminine values on these athletes in an arena where, I mean, it's interesting, right? Like, it's interesting to know what kind of athletes have families and how many kids they have and that sort of thing, but it's not being covered in the men's arenas.
Well, and I think that that's true. I mean, I know we're talking about sports here, but that's true in all entertainment industries. It's actors, it's musicians. Those never go back to, oh, do you have, you know, a partner at home? Do you have kids at home? What happened when you had a new baby? And, you know, did you continue to pursue your musical career after you had a baby? Those questions aren't asked to men either, but they're asked to women because women are expected then to stop their career to then go and take care of their new baby. And if they don't, then they get scrutinized for that. And if they do, they get scrutinized for that. So that's just the same thing that's happening with sports. You know, there was a runner who was performing in the Olympics while pregnant.
Yeah.
Like, one, that's got to be like an amazing feat. Like, I can't even imagine any of that. But, like, that is where the focus was. It wasn't on her talent. It wasn't on her times. It was the fact that she was doing this while pregnant. And then everybody's got an opinion about how that affects her pregnancy and how, you know, her life will be as a mother because of that. When we know that these people see sports coaches, doctors regularly. If they cleared her to run, who do you think you are sitting at home to say, she shouldn't do that while she's pregnant? That might hurt the baby.
And I also want to point out with the language and stuff too of how we use to describe sports is that how often is it that we just describe sports as this is a woman's sport, this is a sport.
Mm-hmm.
This is our national soccer team, this is our women's national soccer team. They're both our national soccer team. But we have to make the preface that this is the woman's version of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, one of those things in that study found that more often than not, athletes were either given, it was female or woman was put in front of the word athlete, meaning that it was women's sports or it was not. There was no men's athlete, no men's sports. You know, it's very clear that there's a discrepancy, which goes back again to the idea that athletics is a naturally masculine arena. It's a naturally masculine thing, and that women don't have a place, haven't historically had a place, or maybe biologically don't have a place in sports. And so that's why we have to label it as women doing this.
And you're lucky if it gets labeled a woman's sport and not a girl's sport.
Yeah.
Because that's the next thing that happens is we call it the girls' gymnastics. We call it the girls. And we're just like using these terms to, you guys, you gotta, I can't do words.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a great point, Amanda, that this, using that term girls, and I think this is something that people struggle with in normal life, but we're here to tell you, using the word girls when you are talking about grown women is infantilizing. What it's doing is looking down on them. It's saying that they aren't full adult humans. It's not giving them the respect that they deserve. And so when we're saying, oh, the girls' soccer, not a single woman on that soccer team at the Olympics is a girl. Correct me if I'm wrong, Sean.
Nope.
Nope. Not a single one is a girl.
Bunch of women.
They are all women. Now, potentially, when you're talking about women's gymnastics, we might be talking about a handful of girls, because as we said earlier, there are minors on our Olympic gymnastics team. But overall, we're talking about adult women. The same thing with ladies. The male equivalent of ladies in our language is gentlemen. Are we saying that the gentlemen gymnastics team, all of these gentlemen out there on the mat, all of the gentlemen on the bars, we don't say that, but we say, look at these ladies and look at how hard these ladies work. Like it's not their, like it's not something they're supposed to do, right? Like it's some shock that women can work hard. And also, I don't know where I'm going with that, but it can be really frustrating, obviously. Yeah, so I mean, it's very clear when you look at the statistics and just when you hear coverage of the Olympics that women are diminished and they are infantilized. It's almost like watching a spectacle when we're watching women in sports at the Olympics, because it the way that the commentary comes across is that it's amazing that these women can do this, and it's not quite the same message being given for men, even though it's equally as amazing that men can do some of these things.
And just quickly, Allie, jumping back to one of the points you made before about how it's just like women just being in sports is just crazy because it's focused primarily on like the masculine traits and stuff. Is sports, if anybody has ever played a sport, you understand, provides every athlete with incredible opportunities for skills that translate off of the field or off the court or whatever sport they're playing outside the pool. It provides them with the abilities to gain leadership skills. It provides them with communication skills. It provides them with understanding of how to be resilient when faced with adversity, how to persevere, how to build themselves up. But when we talk about sports, we often talk about how it just requires a lot of, you have to be really tough and strong to be able to do it.
Yeah.
When we often very much overlook the very tangible things that translate to being outside of that sport.
Yeah.
When we focus on the musculature, the physical strength necessary to do those sports, we overshadow the things that athletes are learning the most, which is how to be leaders. There was one study that I had been reading through that was like, if you look at women who are CEOs, I think it was like 90% of them at one point were like a high school athlete.
Right. I mean, parents put, you know, if there's any parents out there listening that put your kids in Little League and, you know, kids soccer and stuff, why do you do that? You do it so they become socialized, so they learn how to work together, so they learn discipline, so they learn how to deal with disappointment and how to cope with feelings in a healthy way. Like, athletics are they give so much, but when we reduce it to the purely physical and strength-based characteristics that are traditionally masculine, we're really undercutting all of that other stuff and how amazing these humans are as a whole. You know, there's only so much coverage we can take, but like with the Olympics, it has a tendency to boil it down only to the physicality. And and at the end of the day, you know, sports are about respect, and it's clear that coverage of sports is not as respectful as the values that they try to teach people participating in it. So it is tough, but I think that some of these things are, you know, this gendered language and the statistics about coverage just underline how important it is, again, to be mindful of the information we receive and be mindful of the media that we consume. Obviously, Touchy Subjects advocates for that all the time, and the Olympics is not any different.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things I want to hit on, too, is more as a sports thing as a whole, not just focused solely on the Olympics, but the amount of pay that women in sports receive compared to men in sports.
Yeah.
And in part, mainly one of the reasons women aren't paid nearly as much as their male counterparts is because of how just the United States or whatever country they're in or their international federations that run those sports view women's sports. They don't view women's sports as equal to men's sports. They don't provide them with the same amount of coverage. They don't market them the same as they do their men, which means that they're not bringing in as much revenue. So when you don't have the revenue coming in for the women's sports, those organizations or federations don't view women's sports as equal to the men. So they're not paying them as much because they're not bringing in as much revenue, which on a side note annoys me just a little bit, considering that our women's national soccer team brought in the United States Soccer Federation more money than our men's national soccer team did
Right. Over
the past couple of years. Yet our women's national team still makes less money than our men do, which, you know, our men didn't even qualify for this Olympics, but our women did.
Yeah, it's true. There's a very real gender gap in pay all around. And I think I don't remember if it was this past year or the year before that. And correct me if I'm saying the wrong details, but I think it was the women's NCAA tournament. There was an issue with the facilities provided to the athletes, and essentially what it took to get that noticed and changed was their male counterparts speaking up for them. I think that's incredibly poignant in a perfect example of how one-sided athletics are. And how much of a difference there is between them.
And like I mentioned earlier, what does it tell women athletes when you have organizations that don't want to put in the money to be able to develop those athletes more? What values are you enlisting then, or what value is it saying that they have when even the federation or the organizations they play for are not willing to invest more money into them? Because the amount of times I've heard our men's national team could still beat our women's team, highly doubt that. Our women's national team has consistently proven that they are the best women's team in the world. Our men have yet to show that they're even worthy of being in the top 20, except once when they finished 16th in the World Cup. But, you know. Or how women's people say, like, oh, I would never watch women's basketball, it's just boring, they don't score a lot. You realize that if more money was invested into these sports, they would have more time to be able to develop these athletes into being that good. Our men's basketball has been around forever. Men's baseball has been around forever. They've had a lot of time and money invested in those sports to invest in those athletes then to develop them from a very young age. If we're not showing women that they can play basketball, we aren't going to have a lot of women competing in basketball. And when you don't have a lot of people competing in a sport, you lose the competition aspect to it, and you lose the ability to develop your skills further. So unless we make changes and invest more money into women's sports, we're not going to see a whole lot of change happen, because unless there's investment in them and we prove to them that they actually matter in these sports, you're not going to be able to continue to develop people. You're not going to have another Sue Bird. You're not going to get another Megan Rapinoe. You're not going to get another Alex Morgan, because women are going to start realizing that these organizations don't care about them. And if they don't care about their athletes, why would I keep going and playing that sport?
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. Before we close off today, there's one more thing that we want to talk about. And this is something that has made news this Olympic cycle, hasn't it?
Yeah. So really quickly to end off this episode, and while yes, women in sports are treated very differently than men, as we've discussed this whole episode, trans women are treated even more different. Lauren Hubbard, who is the trans woman who is a weightlifter for New Zealand, competed in this Olympics. She faulted on her three lifts, so she didn't move on to the next round, but she had qualified for the Olympics from New Zealand. And a bunch of people saying, like, oh, she shouldn't be competing in this. She's actually a dude and all this stuff, which she isn't. She's a woman. But when you have athletes who do not conform or do not identify with the sex they are assigned at birth, and you are making it very visible and obvious that people are going to bash them and harass them and even threaten them for trying to compete in a sport that is their gender, you are not creating a space for them.
Yeah.
Sports is a space that everybody should feel comfortable in participating in. And by removing that option from them, by bashing them for wanting to do it, you are actively telling the trans community that they are not welcome in that sport.
Right. And honestly, we don't want to glaze over this particular subtopic of today's episode, because trans issues in sports is very important. But I almost think that we would prefer to give it a whole episode, because there is a lot of discussion around how trans athletes are treated in the United States. So we did want to mention it. We don't want to gloss over it in any way, but we do want to recognize that this is a larger topic that we really think deserves a whole episode.
Yep. And just quickly then, before we wrap this up, congratulations to Quinn from the Canadian women's national soccer team. They are a non-binary trans athlete competing for the women's national team, and they are guaranteed a medal in it. So they will be the first trans person to medal in the Olympics, at least openly out trans athlete to medal in the Olympics. So congratulations, Quinn. Whenever that happens, I'll be rooting for Canada. You know,
just that one time.
Good luck, Canada. No, I'm unless they're playing the U.S. I'll root for Canada.
Fair. All right. Well, hopefully that was a good conversation for all of you. We all felt really interested by this topic, and we thought it was timely. We are by no means experts in gender differences in sports, but it was something that we could really delve into. So we enjoyed this week's topic.
Yeah. So thank you all for listening today. Please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Touchy Subs Pod to keep up to date with what we have going out and just other content we're putting out there. Email us any questions, comments, or concerns to touchysubjectspodcast@gmail.com.
And in the meantime, don't be afraid to challenge, ask, and discuss when it comes to touchy subjects.